your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. We've got a lot to cover this evening. I want to welcome each and every one of you out there, and we're just trying to fathom this change in America to a group of people on the left that disregard our existing laws and just want to rewrite and ignore anything that's existing. And David Horowitz has recently written a book, just published it, called Dark America, and he's being interviewed by Tucker Carlson last night. And listen to this and see what David Horowitz says. He's on the far right now. He used to be a liberal left, way on the left. And years ago, he began to wake up. And so his book has to do with the killing off or a war on the Christian right. So listen carefully. Here we go now. Tucker Carlson, David Horowitz.
David Horowitz is not a Christian. He's Jewish. But he knows that people of all religions owe a great deal to America's Christian heritage. He also knows that if America loses that heritage, it will not be the same country, and the country will be worse off. Unfortunately, the left aims to do just that. So Horowitz is sending America a warning. He's just written a new book. It's called Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. David Horowitz joins us tonight. David, thanks so much for coming on tonight. Why did you write
this? Thank you, Tucker. It's an honor to be on the best news show on television, one where you get a dose of reality every night. Thank you.
Well, thanks. So why did you write this book?
Well, every freedom that we hold dear as Americans, every principle, equality, inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, inclusion, tolerance, freedom of speech, every one of these originated as a Christian idea, and a Protestant Christian idea at that. And that's because 98% of the people who created this country were Protestant Christians. Before the Protestant Reformation, you had to go through the Catholic Church and its priesthood to get into heaven. But the Reformed into the Declaration, or Thomas Jefferson wrote it into the Declaration of Independence. And within 25 years, there were hundreds of thousands of freed slaves in the North. And, you know, I'm thinking of this ignorant attack by Colin Kaepernick and Nike on the Betsy Ross flag, which is really goes with the creation of America. The creation of America was probably the greatest gift given to black people in 3,000 years, because slavery was considered a normal institution for all those years. Unfortunately, the people who hate America on the left, and this embraces so much of the Democratic Party these days, have conducted a 50-year, 60-year attack on Christianity in this country. And they've driven prayer and religion out of the schools. You can't teach a public school child that the pilgrims were Christians fleeing persecution. So Americans no longer know where their freedoms come from. And that's why, well, the Democratic Party now is, you know, in a full-scale march to eliminate a lot of the institutions that were there from the beginning, like the Electoral College. They want to do away with the Senate and so forth. That's because they don't understand where our freedoms come from or what their nature is.
That was a remarkable summation. So that has led you, as a non-Christian, to want to defend America, at least acknowledge and explain America's Christian heritage. What kind of response have you gotten?
I'm also an agnostic. But look, you can't have inalienable rights to liberty if there's no God, which is a problematic for an agnostic. I'm not an atheist. That's another kind of faith. I just don't know. But what I realized is that you have to have respect for the idea of God and respect for people who believe in God in order to preserve these freedoms. Because if they come from government, people like Maxine Waters, they're going to be taken away. So the very framework of our freedom is dependent on the Christian nature of this country, as is the fact that we're a secular republic. Why are we a secular republic? Because all these different Protestant sects understood that there would be a threat because, well, they were fleeing established churches in England. They don't want any particular religion to be dominant or any particular interpretation of religion. It's a radical idea. It makes America the unique country in the world that it is. And when I
David
see
Horowitz,
these attacks,
I hope you'll come.
I would be glad.
I'm sorry, we're out of time, but let me just say, I hope this will not be the last time you're on our show, because that was wonderful, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's Tom Fenton coming up and testifying, actually being interviewed about whether or not Mueller is going to testify, and I think Attorney General Barr is going to let him decide that. They've delayed that just recently. And so it's not going to be next week, but it's going to be another 7 days from next week. I think it's on the 24th, maybe, of July is what they have it scheduled. But here was Tom Fenton interviewing about this testimony of Mueller.
Well, and in a new interview, Attorney General Barr today accuses Democrats of trying to create a, quote, public spectacle by subpoenaing former special counsel Robert Mueller to testify before Congress. Speaking to the Associated Press, Barr confirms he will support Mueller if he decides he does not want to appear. A House Judiciary hearing with Mueller is scheduled for July 17th. Joining me now is Tom Fenton, the president of Judicial Watch. Good to see you, Tom. I'm wondering if Mueller wants to testify and if he will be forced to. It doesn't sound like Attorney General Barr is going to force him to if he doesn't want to.
No, I mean, typically someone like Mueller would not be subject to testimony because he's an advisor to the Attorney General, and, you know, you typically ask the Attorney General about Justice Department activities. Although, frankly, Mr. Mueller needs to be asked some questions about his misconduct as special counsel, his hiding, for instance, of the fact that he had to let go of Strzok and Page because of anti-Trump animus that he hid from us, the American people, for at least 4 months, his decision to hire a bunch of anti-Trump donors to Hillary Clinton and obvious partisans, and his decision-making about what he knew and when about his failure to find any Russia collusion. Why did he sit on that for as long as he did? Did the elections come into play in keeping it from the American people? So Mr. Mueller may not want to testify, not for the reasons we're hearing about, but because he would be subject to the scrutiny that's long overdue of his investigation.
And then there is what he didn't investigate, which a lot of us want answers to, and which is involving a whole lot of investigators now. And primary among them, as issues come up, and I'm sure it's not going to be the first time this happens over the next few months, is the question of the State Department official who interviewed Mr. Steele, the man behind the Trump dossier, a couple of weeks before the FBI FISA warrant went out. The State Department official, who was an Obama official, no friend of Donald Trump's, that's for sure, was upset by the fact that Mr. Steele was saying things that weren't true, apparently tried to warn some people at the FBI, and they went ahead with a FISA warrant anyway based on the Steele information.
Yeah, that didn't make it into his report, did it?
No, it didn't.
You know, and the dossier, rather than being used by Mueller to target Trump, which what it was, should have been investigated by Mr. Mueller, if indeed he was interested in Russian interference in the election, because that was the vehicle. Russia misinformation, working happily with the FBI and DOJ of President Obama, and frankly some of the Trump administration, the deep staters there, laundering it through the dossier to justify spying on the president. Why didn't he investigate that? The only mention of the dossier directly in the Mueller report, as best I could say, he says it's unverified.
Right.
It's the cornerstone of the Russia interference, the real Russia interference in the campaign, and it's still having an echo because we're going to have, again, the Democrats raising it and Mueller having to talk about it in a week or so.
Yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit to immigration, which is the topic du jour. You folks have done some digging and found out some dirty little secrets about the Obama administration's record on immigration. Share it with us if you can.
Yeah, and we've long had records from the Obama administration showing reports of abuse by officials in the people who were handling the UACs, the unaccompanied minors, and people like that. It was a list of horribles. First of all, they were obviously abused on the way up here. The criminals were making their way in under the Obama administration. And then, of course, once we had to provide them humanitarian assistance, several were complaining about abuse they were suffering at the hands of people paid by the Obama administration to take care of them. If this had been a list of Trump administration offenses, it'd be front page news everywhere. So what you hear about the Trump administration, which in many ways is unverified, we have verified in government documents about the Obama administration in terms of abuse. Yeah. The crisis, humanitarian crisis caused by the open borders under Obama.
Tom, we only have about 45 seconds, but I got to ask you about this Cuomo bill that essentially gives the right to reveal New York State tax information from Donald Trump with the rest of the world. What do you make of this?
It's third world. It's a third world style attack on the rule of law, targeting President Trump. It's more harassment of President Trump. It never ends. In my view, the census judicial decision making by the Supreme Court and those lower courts is judicial harassment of President Trump. And we're having harassment in New York of the president with this bill and the other harassing investigations up there. This president has been subjected to abuse like no other in terms of attack on the rule of law that protect typically presidents from so that they're able to do their jobs. It's just unbelievable to me.
And, of course, the cheerleading from the mainstream media going along with it side by side. It's hard to tell who's promoting what, whether one side is doing the initiating. Some people think it comes from the media to the Democrats, and they follow suit. But however it goes, it's definitely third world, as you say. Tom, great to see you. Thank you very much.
We have coming up next is AOC questioning Tom Homan. And he's former acting director of ICE, and he's had about 34 years of experience along the border. And so this is what the exchange sounds like. And AOC goes into this long, drawn-out piece of paper that he had some kind of issued, some kind of an order. And then Tom Homan makes a conclusion at the end that's very forceful and very dynamic. So listen carefully to this.
And we found a memo. Dates back to April 23rd of 2018, where there was an official recommendation to, quote, pursue prosecution of all amenable adults who cross our border, quote, illegally, even though this applied to legal asylum seekers in practice, including those presenting with a family unit between ports of entry in coordination with DOJ. Here is the memo that I would like to submit to the congressional record.
What is the date of that?
It is the memorandum for the secretary from Homeland Security.
Date.
April 23rd, 2018, subject increasing prosecutions of immigration violations.
Without objection.
And so I looked at this memo, and it seems like this is the source of it. And it seems as though, Mr. Homan, that you are the author. It says here from yourself, Kevin Mikkelinen, and Francis Cisna. Is this correct? Did you sign the memo?
I'd have to see what
you're giving.
I'd be happy to provide it. And we'll provide it over. But I would like to note that here it says the official recommendation. There were three different options presented. The third included the option for family separation. This initiative would pursue prosecution of all amenable adults, including those presenting with a family unit. Mr. Homan, your name is on this. Is this correct?
Yes, I signed that memo.
So you are the author of the family separation policy?
I am not the author of this memo.
You're not the author, but you signed the memo.
Yes, a zero tolerance memo.
So you provided the official recommendation to Secretary Nielsen on family, for the United States to pursue family separation.
I gave Secretary Nielsen numerous recommendations on how to secure the border and save lives.
But it says here that you gave her numerous options, but the recommendation was option three, family separation.
What I'm saying, this is not the only paper where we've given the Secretary numerous options to secure the border and save lives.
And so the recommendation, of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommended zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
The same as is with every U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their
If parents. I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
Mr.
father
Holman,
from his family.
With all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
See, they want people like AOC want to maintain that entering the United States, there are nothing, the term illegal alien doesn't really apply. Now, here's another interview that Greg Jarrett, sitting in for Lou Dobbs, had with Tom Holman. And it's very, very insightful. So here's an extension of this little tit-for-tat that AOC had earlier that day with Tom Holman, who's a very outstanding stand-up man. Here we go now with Greg Jarrett's interview with Tom Holman.
Well, it was an intense day, to say the least, on Capitol Hill today as former acting ICE Director Tom Holman delivered an impassioned defense of Border Patrol agents ripping into the inaction of congressional lawmakers. Listen to this exchange with Illinois Democrat Jesus Garcia.
Mr. Holman, I'm a father. Do you have children? How can you possibly allow this to happen under your watch? Do you not care? Is it because these children don't look like children that are around you? I don't get it. Have you ever held a deceased child in your arms?
First of all, your comments are disgusting. I've served my
country.
I've served my country for 34 years.
I find your comments
disgusting.
This is
out of control.
Well.
I've served my country for 34 years. And yes, I held a 5-year-old boy in my arms that, in back of that tractor trailer. I knelt down beside him and said a prayer for him because I knew what his last 30 minutes of his life were like. And I had a 5-year-old son at the time. What I've been trying to do my 34 years serving my nation is to save lives. So for you to sit there and insult my integrity and my love for my country and for children, that's why this whole thing needs to be fixed. And you're the member
of
Congress.
We agree on that.
Fix it.
We agree on that, but I disagree. But I also disagree with your characterization of immigrants as prone to criminality.
People for 3 decades on this.
Gentlemen, time has expired.
Joining me now is that gentleman, Tom Holman, former acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's also a Fox Business contributor. Director Holman, thank you for being with us. It was quite a day today. The treatment of you was nothing short of appalling. In particular, Jesus Garcia, who accused you of being racist, which is what uninformed people do when they don't have a good argument. It appears to me that Representative Garcia is the racist here, and you were clearly, and said so, disgusted by it. How many lives have been saved by Border Patrol agents, sir?
Just this past year, they saved over 4,000 lives, but no one wanted to talk about that today. I was the only one wanted to talk about it. And yes, I was insulted by him and many others. Representative Gerald Connolly from Virginia. You know, he threw out dirt and wouldn't let me respond. This is about political theater. He ran out of there like a little girl. He's a coward, and he didn't want to hear my response because this was all political theater. These people don't want the American people to hear the truth. I said several times in this hearing, this is about transparency, but you won't let me respond to what you're saying. If this is a focus of Congress to push a false narrative and not let someone like me who spent 34 years on that border to speak to the issue, that tells you what this is all about. This is about resisting this president. This is about open borders. They don't want to hear the truth.
Well, and I commend you for saying that they should be ashamed of themselves. Indeed, they should. You know, Director, for the longest time, mostly Democrats were saying, oh, there's no problem at the border. There's no crisis at the border. It's all a manufactured crisis. Well, now they've changed their tune, haven't they?
Absolutely. And they're saying, oh, they're talking about the appalling conditions in detention. And I was clear to them. I said, that's because you failed. The Secretary of Homeland Security, along with the head of the Border Patrol, has been asking for months for supplemental funding to move people that women and children, the Border Patrol facilities aren't built for them. They've been begging them for money to move into an HHS bed, but they just kept denying them and denying them and denying them. Even after they finally did approve the funding, you got people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that didn't support the funding to make the conditions better. And she's still talking about detention conditions on the southwest border. And we wouldn't have any of this. There wouldn't be conditions on the southwest border that would be unwelcoming to these women and children. If they would have done their job and closed the loopholes, we've asked them to close for 2 years.
Yeah. You mentioned Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez today, who demanded that she be sworn in to testify, which seemed to confuse the chairman because, you know, that's not normally what happens since you're a member of Congress. I want to play a clip and then get your reaction. Here it is.
If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
father from his family. Mr. Holman, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
Unlawful presence in the United States is not a crime, but you are correct, sir, that coming into the United States illegally is a crime. Sneaking across the border is a crime. So AOC was engaging in her typically inane comments. And she's the one who continues to decry conditions at the border, and yet she voted hell no when it came time for a $4.6 billion in funding to relieve the conditions at the border. She's nothing but a hypocrite, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And look, every time she opens her mouth, she's wrong. I mean, I've never heard her speak one time on immigration and she'd be accurate. I mean, I'm a career law enforcement officer, but it's astounding that a member of Congress, a legislator, does not realize entering this country is a crime. She ought to do her homework before she starts getting on her podium and saying things that aren't true. She's the worst politician in that committee, and you know she doesn't know fact from fiction, and you know she's been a congressman for 6 months. Apparently she's an expert at everything, but she's an expert at nothing.
Yeah, she was a bartender less than a year ago. Not that I have anything against people like bartenders and waitresses and so forth, but you know, it doesn't make you an expert on everything. You know, most freshman members of Congress come in and they know enough to keep their mouths shut, to learn, observe, to listen. But no, she's an expert on everything. I want to go to a moment now where you were showing photographs of children and elderly people who had been victimized violently by illegal immigrants. Talk to us about that.
There is a... You know, they talked about family separation during the zero tolerance thing, and of course it's sad when a child separated from a parent, but the parent's being prosecuted, and that happens to American families every day. And the separations, even though unfortunate,
It's a necessary part of the legal system. If you and I got arrested tonight, as you said in an early clip, for DUI, and we have a child in the car, we're going to go to jail, and that child's going to go to CPS. It happens to American families every day. But they want a different set of rules for illegal aliens. So I wanted to show, I brought my own pictures of separations. These are children that were killed by illegal aliens, that some were released from sanctuary cities, or some were because of the open borders and abolish, you know, all the talk that Democrats have. So I show a couple examples. One was a five-month-old baby that was raped, sexually penetrated by an illegal alien and died, was murdered. Another five-year-old little girl that was raped and murdered. A 93-year-old lady that was raped multiple times and murdered. So I want to show you, know what? I agree, child separations are sad, but that's a temporary separation because of parents being prosecuted. Here's some separations that are forever. These parents will never see these children again, and they died a horrific death. So if you want to shed tears for, you know, those separations, I get it. But how about shedding some tears for U.S. citizens that have been murdered, children have been murdered by the illegal aliens? I've met with these angel moms and dads. Every story is tragic, and you never get used to hearing them. But they don't want to talk about that. They right. want to keep pushing their false narrative to the American people, and I wasn't going to allow it today. I wasn't going to allow it.
And Representatives Tlaib and Pressig, Tlaib was in tears today, you know, because using the term illegal immigrant is derogatory and demeaning, and she seemed to be blaming you and others, and yet she's so dumb she doesn't realize it's actually in the law that Congress wrote. Illegal aliens, and you cited the statute, and there's another one as well. She ought to look them up. If she wants to change that language, she ought to change it herself. She's a member of Congress. Congress created that law with that language.
Absolutely. There's another congressman who doesn't know the law. I mean, illegal alien is clearly spelled out, not only Title 8, the United States Code, the Immigration Nationality Act, which I can say was enacted by Congress, which she's a part of.
Right.
Do your homework. Before you get out there and attack this administration, attack the men and women of ICE and the Border Patrol, do your homework. At least do that so you can be accurate, truthful with American people.
Don't you know the Mod Squad, you know, they're total knowledge and ultimate wisdom, and they decide everything. Tom Homan, thank you so much. I'm sorry you had to go through that today. It was unfair.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Here's some further couple of reports from Denver stations concerning a crowd that was assembled outside the Aurora, Colorado ICE headquarters, and they took down the American flag and put up a Mexican flag. But anyway, these are the two reports. I'm going to play both of them so you'll hear sort of a fair-sided view from both of the reports. Here we go with these two reports.
Let me show you what's going on right now. This is what's left of a candlelight vigil. There's some chanting going on. A few hundred people are left here, though. Just about 20, 30 minutes ago, this place was packed with more than 1,000. It got out of control, and let me show you why. It's what you talked about. You look over there on the ICE Detention Center property. There were a couple hundred protesters there. They pulled down the American flag and the Colorado state flag, and instead, they raised the Mexican flag, an upside-down American thin blue line flag, and another flag that we can't tell you about the words that are on because they're quite derogatory. As this is going on, the organizers came out here and said that Aurora police were going to shut this down. This got a lot of people to leave here, but almost immediately after that, we heard back from police and said, no, they were not going to. This is a permitted and legal event that despite a few hundred of them going over there and getting on ICE property, that, by the way, is illegal tonight. Of course, all of this is happening less than 48 hours away from those nationwide ICE arrests that are set to start, potentially some here in Denver. So tonight we're separating the fear that a lot of people have about those from the facts. Their message is loud and clear. They want ICE abolished. This group of a few hundred people is protesting and letting Denver know they support the nearly 55,000 immigrants who are living in the city illegally and are concerned because of what President Trump officially announced today about a targeted ICE operation.
It starts on Sunday, and they're going to take people out, and they're going to bring them back to their countries.
President Trump says ICE agents will specifically target criminals and those who have been ordered by a court to leave the United States. This could amount to about 2,000 immigrants nationwide and potentially some in Denver.
We do not cooperate with ICE. As my grandma Dolores would say, this ass backwards policy of the White House is taking us backwards.
That's why Mayor Michael Hancock is gathering city leaders to talk about how Denver is responding to the ICE operation.
One of the concerns is even if they're at the door for one individual, they may take into custody anyone else there that they suspect of being undocumented. And that is the concern that families have.
ICE has not said if that'll happen with the weekend arrests, but in case it does, the city of Denver says it's ready to help with an immigrant defense fund that includes $300,000 of city money. Plus, the city has been working with families that could be targeted to make sure children stay safe.
See if they'll sign documents, guardianship documents, make sure their relatives or friends are ready to help out.
Meanwhile, Denver police promise they will not take part in the ICE arrests and never ask anyone about immigration status, including criminals they arrest.
We absolutely want to hold criminals accountable for their crimes. And that's our focus.
Officers typically get about a 10-minute heads up from ICE agents before they make arrests. Arrests that Senator Cory Gardner, a Republican, has this to say about.
The law is the law. What we need is an ability to find a way to reform the laws to make sure that they work for everyone. We have secure borders and that we find ways to get people in this country legally.
Until that happens, protests like these will probably continue with plenty of people trying to send a message from Colorado all the way to the U.S. Capitol.
Here we go with the second report from a station there in Aurora, Colorado also. So here we go, reporting on the same event where they took down the American flag and put up the Mexican flag. Here we go right now.
And tonight, what lies ahead over the next 48 hours for immigrants in Colorado? As the feds gear up for what the president calls a major deportation operation. This crowd represents the Coloradans who are angry with the president's policy. They say it's immoral, ripping families apart, and they are looking to city and state leaders to take a stand. Denver 7's Jacqueline Allen is live at the ICE detention facility in Aurora tonight, where a fired-up crowd tried to make their case by replacing the U.S. flag with an anti-police flag. Jacqueline?
That's right. Now, just in the last 20 minutes, ICE has put the American flag and the Colorado flag back up in its place. But before that, this is what it looked like. Protesters, a small group of them, took down the Colorado and American flags and replaced them with the Mexican flag. They put up an anti-police flag and they put an upside-down, defaced American flag up. Most people here, thousands of people, protested peacefully. And tonight, they're just hoping that their message is heard over that controversy.
Close the camps!
Sometimes it seems like the news we see on TV
money for jobs and education
is so far removed from us until we look a little closer.
He is a child like any of those other three-year-olds in the concentration camp. So it just breaks my heart and it makes me really angry.
Denver teacher Kathleen Frank showed up with her son because she couldn't stop thinking about the children.
I think it needs to be ended immediately, and I feel really helpless in the face of this just unbelievable pain.
From Palestine to Mexico!
Hundreds of people protest together, some in fear of what may happen this weekend if the ICE raids Trump has promised happen in Denver.
They don't know if when they leave for work one day, they'll come back to their family. That's a reality that I've lived with every day.
Gladys Ibarra is undocumented and works with Colorado's immigrant community. While raids have always been a concern, now she says the words are more terrifying than ever.
This is 28 years of my life, so I know that a lot of people are outraged now, and I hope that the outrage continues past today.
For now, the community hopes to shine a light so that we all look a little closer.
This reporter ends up so shine a bright light so we'll see a little closer. Well, what are we going to see a little closer? Earlier in this broadcast, we made the point that people are going outside of the law. They're taking law into their own hands. These demonstrators in Aurora, Colorado, actually trespassed upon ICE property when they went up there and took those flags down. And so they're supposedly they had a license, a permit to demonstrate out there, but they had no license to go and change those flags, but they did so illegally. But then they changed it back, see. So is this America or is this Mexico? I mean, and do the Democrats are making a fatal error in establishing its open border policy, and the American public is beginning to view that as very, very dangerous for the country. and they're not going to go for that. You know, they just will not dig into that. So here we go next. We've got Mike Chernovich and Stefan Molinar are going to discuss the Jeffrey Epstein, and we're going to end up with that and play that all the way through as far as we go. But Mike Chernovich early on wrote about and uncovered the Jeffrey Epstein problem down in Florida. And he was followed and looked after. And, I mean, he was threatened down there. And, this is his story. So listen closely to this and see what you think. These big people, they get a lot of money. And in fact, Jeffrey Epstein was accused of harassing many of the people that were making, were alleging certain violations that he committed. With private detectives and so forth. So anyway, listen to this interview. It's very interesting with Chernovich.
Hi everybody, Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. So an amazing thing happened this weekend. The clouds of injustice parted and an ray of light is shining through insofar as predator Jeffrey Epstein was arrested at the airport on returning from a nice vacation in Paris. And the man at the center of why this happened, Mike Chernovich, going to talk to him in just a minute or two about his role in getting the records in a long ago case involving Epstein unsealed to the point where now Epstein is being charged with more serious crimes. So this is a summary from Ann Coulter. It's a very good summary of what happened and what it is that we're going to be talking about just in case you haven't kept up to speed on this. So in 2005, the Palm Beach police were told by the mother of a young girl in West Palm Beach, that her daughter had been brought to the Democrat donor's mansion, that's Jeffrey Epstein, and asked to have sex with him for money. This kicked off an intensive one-year undercover investigation. The police sifted through Epstein's garbage and interviewed 17 witnesses, including the houseman, who told of sex toys and dildos left behind after the underage girls left. One of Epstein's procurers, a 20-year-old local woman named Haley Robson, who was paid $200 for every teenage girl she brought to Jeffrey, was cooperating with police, telling them she was like Heidi Fleiss. It was the New York madam. So the police obtained statements from five of Epstein's young victims who said they'd been paid $200 to $300 to engage in various sex acts with him. Police raided Epstein's home, finding explicit photographs of teenage girls, incriminating phone records, and one girl's high school transcript. By the by, they also found a fully outfitted dental chair in his bathroom for reasons that I pray I go to the grave without knowing. So when the police chief brought this mountain of evidence that they'd got from Epstein's house to Palm Beach County's Democratic prosecutor, Barry Krishna, Barry Krishna, punted, charging the Democrat child molester with only one count of soliciting prostitution. Yes, the child victims were labeled prostitutes and offered Epstein probation. Palm Beach Police Chief Michael Reiter exploded in rage. Meanwhile, of course, Epstein claimed to be the victim of an anti-Semitic conspiracy on Palm Beach. Chief Reiter wrote an open letter to Krishna asking the Democrat to remove himself from the case. Then he turned to the Bush administration to seek justice against a Democratic donor slash accused child rapist. CNN and MSNBC did not breathe a word about a Democratic prosecutor refusing to hold a Democratic child rapist accountable. As a result of the Republican-led federal investigation, Epstein was finally required to plead guilty to two state felony charges, accept a sentence of 2 years in prison, register as a sex offender, and pay restitution to his victims. But even more unusual, the deal included wording that granted immunity to, quote, any potential co-conspirators who were also involved in Epstein's crimes. These accomplices or participants were not identified in the agreement, leaving it open to interpretation whether it possibly referred to other influential people who were having sex with underage girls at Epstein's various homes or on his plane. This is the plane that was nicknamed the Lolita Express, because Lolita, of course, a novel about pedophilia from Vladimir Nabokov. Inasmuch as Epstein was pleading guilty to a state charge, the matter of his confinement was out of the U.S. attorney's hands. It was Democratic county prison officials, not the feds, who placed Epstein in a private wing of the county jail and allowed him to spend 12 hours a day, 6 days a week at his Palm Beach mansion throughout his 13-month, quote, imprisonment. So that's the backstory, and we've talked about this before with Mike Cernovich, but let's help him do his victory lap in getting this guy arrested. All right, so here with Mike Cernovich, and you just listened to an intro to what's going on. I tell you, I was in a play. I was seeing some Shakespeare. I get out, I check my phone, and people got to see me do the Harlem Shuffle of Joy right there in the hotel lobby, because it was like, boom, you know, like everyone has their Osama bin Laden moment. We got him. And, you know, not the we, but the you got him. 2.5 years, $50,000 plus, dogged determination, legal expertise, partnering up with the Miami Herald, who came along later. How surprised were you? Did you know this was going down, that he was going to get arrested, Epstein?
No, I didn't. I was at the gym, actually. I was a sweaty mess. I got back from the gym and was hanging out, and then I got text messages, Epstein, and I go, what the heck, right? And I run out, and I go, okay, I better go live right now. And I went live, and I had to do the old – my hair, the gym hair, right? I'll style it with the sweat from my brow.
Yeah, for me, it's a quick comb through the eyebrows. But so they took him. He was just coming back from France, right? They took him right at the airport, which is, of course, where they like to get people. And it was based on the unsealing of these records. Now, the idea that the court sat on these records that I guess would appear to have criminal content to them for so long is really appalling. Do you know if there was one sentence, one phrase, one piece of information that pushed the police into action?
No, what happened is that the prosecutors realized the truth was going to get out there now. They couldn't cover it up. So they waited until the very last hour. If the court had ruled against me and the Miami Herald, this indictment wouldn't have happened, because the cover-up could have continued. But there's over 2,000 documents. I haven't seen them yet. Nobody has, that are being in the process of being unsealed right now. And with those documents, everybody now has the whole enchilada about what Epstein did. And there was just no credible way. So this was a real, as much as it feels like justice, woo, this was not justice. This was federal prosecutors who sat on this information for decades, covering their butts because some guy who wrote a book about gorillas was going to make all of it public. And life is complicated. It's simultaneously inspirational, know that everybody listening has the potential to make a difference. And it's also a bit demoralizing that it takes people like us to step up, because the institutions are so corrupt and faulty that they won't do it if we don't push them to do it.
Well, there was a weird thing that happened with regards to the original prosecution. There was this convoluted relationship between the local police and the feds, which it seems to me like it's across state lines. It's actually off the continental U.S., so it seemed to me to be a federal matter. But the local police chief was first of all appalled at what was being talked about, and so then it was punted for a conviction and then punted back for sentencing and the sweetheart deal and all that. There's a lot of frustration in law enforcement, I think, about how this was handled as well.
Yeah, especially by the line police, you know, the real law enforcement, not the higher up. So what happened is Epstein would fly underage girls to his island, and he would bring all kinds of people that are party with him, and he would bring girls from Florida. So if you travel, if you take a woman underage through interstate commerce, that's a state crime from wherever it originated from. And it's also a federal crime because he crossed state lines. So Epstein was looking down the double barrel of state and federal prosecution. And if this sounds familiar, we have a precedent, Paul Manafort. He was prosecuted for federal crimes relating to mortgage and other things. But he was also prosecuted now for state crimes. And boy, look at how the media went after Manafort. Look at how the Department of Justice went after Manafort. John Cardillo made a great point, which is that Roger Stone, who basically forgot a couple dates, he's a 65-year-old man, and you got a few dates wrong, SWAT team went to his house. Where was the SWAT team for Jeffrey Epstein? Right? No SWAT team. Oh, you know, gentleman's agreement. Oh, you're landing in New York, and welcome, but we have to take you into custody. Sorry about this. So that really shows how corrupt the system is, because This is not being handled the way Manafort was handled. This is not being handled the way Roger Stone was handled. This is still being coddled, but it doesn't matter. We won in court, and we're going to get the record. So whatever the feds do, they're going to do. But my work is still going on.
Well, it is also somewhat predictable, but still fascinating to see. And you tweeted about this. A law school dean and a lawyer leaves your name out of the case. And the fact that the media doesn't like you for a variety of reasons, competition, competence, the excellent documentary Hoax, which people should get at hoaxedmovie.com, and just writing you out of the entire story, like Emmanuel Goldenstein slash Stalin unpersoning style, is really remarkable to see in real time.
Yeah, it was amazing. So I was the first person, as people who watched our original chats about this know, who filed the lawsuit to get this information. It's just a matter of – it's in the court records. This isn't me, you know, making this kind of stuff up or exaggerating my role. It's just objective fact. And then the Miami Herald filed their own lawsuit. And when they filed it, they joined mine. They joined it on appeal. And then what happened is Julie Brown did amazing follow-up reporting and original reporting. So Julie Brown, Miami Herald, they get all – you know, accolades to me. I'm not taking anything from them. However, it's just a lie to claim that I was never involved and this was all done by the Miami Herald. No. This was me. I mean, you remember I was like a man screaming in the wilderness alone for a full year. Like, hey, I filed this. You know, there's no interest. Where's the New York Times? Where's CNN? Where's the Woke Patrol? Where's the Daily Beast? Oh, they care so much about women. Where's the Huffington Post? Oh, you care so much about people. You're so woke. Where's Vice? They all just pretended like it didn't happen. They didn't file any kind of amicus brief supporting it. So what happened with my case on appeal, the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press joined my appeal. That's a pretty, like, that's a real thing. And then the Miami Herald started sniffing around. They filed their own lawsuit. They did great work, but everybody's saying, oh, great job, Miami Herald. They won in court. No. That's not the truth. So they're working to write me out of the story, which is predictable. I mean, we knew that they would try to do this, but it shows how petty they are and how they don't care about the truth. And again, I keep circling back to, why did I have to do this? The lawsuit. Because they wouldn't, right? Because they wouldn't. If not me, then who? But this is their jobs. They're the ones who should be doing this. It shouldn't fall on us.
And this is something that I really, really want people to understand, which is for that year, I think it was a year or so, Mike, that you, before other people joined in on the lawsuit, you were really exposed. You were really vulnerable. I mean, these are powerful people. We've got Prince Andrew kicking around. You've got a lot of people, a lot of high powered. The Clintons kicking around this whole thing. A lot of high powered, powerful people who, may not be entirely above causing trouble for you. Let's just put it as nicely as humanly possible. Now, once you get joined in by the Miami Herald, it becomes a little bit easier. There's more strength in numbers. But that first year, man, there's got to have been some sleepless nights where you're like, okay, where's this going to go? If nobody joins me and it succeeds, that's kind of like the worst combination. Good for truth, bad for Mike Cernovich. That had to have been a pretty exciting year before you had some flanks covered.
Oh, there were many nights I wondered why I did this, because initially it was supposed to be a $10,000 kind of flat fee lawsuit in it. Because to be honest, the law of this is not that complicated. You cannot get an entire case file in a civil suit sealed. You just can't. It's kind of like you did software engineering. And if I tried to just say something like about C++ or whatever, you would just say, no, that's just not how you just can't. You can't just do that. And the law is in many ways like that, where you just can't file a lawsuit under seal and get everything hidden. Now, you can get redaction, social security numbers, credit card numbers, a paragraph here and there. This was unprecedented. So for me, it was supposed to be like, okay, this is a, you know, not a particularly challenging case, $10,000. And so I just wrote the check, you know, didn't think twice about it or whatever. And then I'm like, oh, man, they were litigating the heck out of it. All kinds of third parties are involved. Epstein's involved. Some mysterious John Doe that we could talk about was involved. We don't know about paperwork churning back and forth. I'm like, God, this is going to cost me like a lot of money. And this, you know, got to stress out about that, stress out about if they're going to try to, you know, kill me or frame me or set me up or hire a PR firm. Because there was a time, you remember this, there was a PR firm going after me with bots. Like, you couldn't read my notifications. There was some kind of non-authentic or inauthentic behavior going on. So there were people paying a lot of money to target me. And yeah, I thought, why did I do this? You know, because you don't know that you're going to win. You could possibly lose. So for me, and again, that's why all credit to Miami Herald. Once they came in, I was like, all right, well, you can't go after the Miami Herald, you know? So I know that people still want their revenge. And if injury must be done to a man should be so severe as vengeance may not be feared. So unless Epstein goes away forever, but I don't know if Prince Andrew or somebody gets implicated. You know, these are literal royalty. I mean, we're not talking millionaires or even billionaires. We're talking people with access to trillions of dollars. And yeah, that was stressful. And now after all this, the media wants to just pretend I didn't have anything to do with it. And I'm just not going to allow it. And fortunately, the people who follow us, follow me, they know the truth. And I thank you for your support and making sure that gets out to the truth.
Well, credit where credit is due is really, really important. And it is also predictable, but fascinating to watch this pivot to now he's like Trump's bestie. These days,
right?
This is the pivot, right? That Trump said something nice about him in 2002, although at the same time, basically Trump was saying, yeah, this guy likes him real young. You know, that's kind of like a warning. It's how to warn people about someone, in my view, without actually ending up getting sued. And of course, the media is saying, how could you say nice things about this guy when the media had been covering up for this guy for years and years and years? So how was Trump supposed to know when this wasn't even being talked about in the media?
Right. And the media only cares because it's a way to go after Trump vis-a-vis Acosta. So they don't, again, this is not pure. That's why I always love when people try to question my motivations, right? This is not pure on the media's part. They know that they can now, what's the Trump angle, Acosta? How did Acosta do this deal or whatever? And by the way, at the time when they were putting Acosta up for labor secretary, I told the Trump people, this is a very dumb thing to do. And they did anyway. And moreover, people forget Acosta had a Senate confirmation hearing. Where was the media? There were like two or three articles. Oh, you know, Dianne Feinstein asked him a couple questions about it, and then the Senate voted to confirm him. So now they're trying to, again, we're living 1984, bro. They're trying to say, I can't believe they approved Acosta. What do you mean you can't believe it? This was all public. Acosta's role was public record. He appeared before the Senate. No Democrats were hitting him hard. The media wasn't hitting him hard. They weren't following him around. They weren't doing, you know, front page of the New York Times. Like you're front page of the New York Times because some dork who has daddy issues, you know, viewed you as a father figure and then felt betrayed and because of that lashed out in the way that boys who aren't fully integrated as men do. Front page New York Times. There was no front page of the New York Times about Acosta and his hearing before the Senate. So the media, now they're trying to storm in, look at us. No, they're same thing with the Weinstein thing. They didn't break it. When the story breaks, now they all run in charge. They're just herd animals. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to take credit for other people's work. And it shows, again, we just have a really garbage tier media where people don't want to actually break stories.
Let's talk about two other people, Mike. Mueller, in charge of the FBI during this time, and Preet Bharara, who was U.S. Attorney for the Southern District from 2009 to 2017 and could have done a whole bunch of stuff, but what, instead went after Dinesh D'Souza?
Yeah, so the pre-angle is an important one, and I'll tell you why. The Southern District of New York has charged Jeffrey Epstein for conduct that happened in the early to mid-2000s. So Preet was head of SDNY until 2017, so that means he could have charged Epstein for that behavior. It isn't like Preet left office and now they're charging Epstein for something in 2018. No, they're charging him for stuff that happened when Preet had jurisdiction over it. Didn't charge it, but he put Dinesh D'Souza in prison because Dinesh, gave $25,000 to a friend of his.
I think it was 20 grand, and it may have gone past some campaign laws or something like that.
Yeah, they claimed to use straw donors. So, my friend's running for office. Hey, five of you friends, write her a check and I'll reimburse you. You know, it's like, okay, technically that's illegal. Okay. It's a paperwork violation. Get real though. That's what you're going after people for. The Southern District of New York. Meanwhile, Jeffrey Epstein got away with everything. Where was Preet? Nowhere. He was nowhere to be found. And now everybody's going, yeah, the SDNY is so great. Where were they? They didn't do anything when Preet was in office. And now Preet, he's a rough crusader for justice and blah, 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 trying to weaponize this against Trump. But no, bro, you were going after Dinesh over nonsense. and could have gone after Epstein and didn't. So there's a lot of people who they just need to have a seat at the little kids' table.
And, you know, again, the fact that Mueller was in charge of the FBI during all of this time, and the FBI would have had some jurisdiction over this, and let him seem to skate, or they actually, the thing that troubles me enormously about this is in order to reduce the charges against Epstein, they had to recast his victims as prostitutes. What an appalling thing to do to a victim of this kind of abuse, to say, well, you know, he was soliciting prostitution, he was getting girls for the sake of prostitution and so on. And these were, you know, kids, they were victims, you know, misguided and troubled youth who were taken in and preyed upon. And then to downgrade them as prostitutes in order to get this guy off the hook, repulsive to me.
Yeah, and there's some indication that Epstein was an informant for the FBI under Mueller's watch. So we're getting at, and again, this is where there's two ways of viewing the case, which is the buck stops here and how can everybody know everything? But so here's the way I look at it is, if you're going to try to say Acosta is wrong because he signed off on the work of his subordinates, there's an argument for that. The buck stops with you, buddy. But that said, you have to say, well, what did Mueller do then? Because the FBI was investigating, and Mueller signed off on the deal too in his own way. So why aren't the media going up to Mueller? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't they going to Preet saying, where were you? So again, it's just partisanship. And me, I don't see it as partisan. I just think these people are all evil and both sides. And I think Acosta and them, just the establishment. He's got good lawyers. Do we really want to fight it? You know, it's going to be a lengthy trial. We might lose. I don't know. They're cowards, moral cowards. And that's just the kind of people who end up in office. It isn't the real fighters. It isn't the real hellraisers.
How far do you think this is going to go, Mike? I mean, there's theories floating around, which seem to me to have some credibility. I mean, they know that this guy was filming. Right, that they found cameras, I think, in the entrance to his New York apartment. There are, like, literally eyeballs hanging to sort of give people a kind of jokey warning about this stuff. If this guy has lots of footage of powerful people with underage girls, that is quite a tentacle arm set of reaches into the upper echelons of power. And I think that's one of the reasons why this deal was squelched, not just because of Epstein and why his prosecution was so underplayed, not just because of him, of course, but because where all of this stuff leads.
That last point that Stephen Molyneux made was that the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, you could say, leads to much higher people. And so it's really dreadful what's happening in the country, is that our higher-ups have evolved into a very, very cultic, very, very secret society, practicing a very esoteric, you could say, practices of initiation and so forth, and using children sometimes, unfortunately. So this is where our upper level, the ultra rich, have evolved into pedophilia and other certain dastardly things. So anyway, we just got to try to uncover that the best way we can. Want to thank everyone out there in our listening audience and viewing audience. Thank you for your support. And we're just going to try to continue to expose as much of this corruption as we can. And we want to thank people like Alex Jones, Molyneux, Chernovich, and a lot of other people that have gone a lot to down the road a lot further than myself, and it exposed a lot of good things that we need to do. Thank you and good night.